This podcast is certified fresh. Freshmediaworks.com.
Hello, this is Terrence McLean of the Never Was podcast, and you are listening to Michael Herron on Mikey Pod.
Eligible, not too stupid, intelligible, and cute as Cupid. Knowledgeable, but not always right, salvageable, and free for the night. My heart's running round like a chicken with its head cut off. All around the barnyard, falling in and out of love. The poor thing's blind as a bat, getting up, falling down, getting up. Who'd fall in love with a chicken with its head cut off? Whoa, Nelly. My wife doesn't understand me, many dozens hope to land me. I'm for free love and I'm in free fall. This could be love or nothing at all. But my heart's running round like a chicken with its head cut off. All around the barnyard, falling in and out of love. The poor thing's blind as a bat, getting up.
Stephen Merritt with Magnetic Fields, one of the many projects he's involved with a chicken with his head cut off. I was looking for a song to start the show with, and I looked at Six Eyes. I think it's sixeyes.blogspot.com, which is one of my favorite music sites. And he had a Stephen Merritt song up there, but I decided to play this one because I always mean to play Stephen Merritt, and I don't always do it. So I just did. That's from the album 69 Love Songs, which is actually a 3-CD album. And it actually has 69 songs. A coincidence, I'm sure. Hello, this is Mikey Pod. Today's November 5th, 2006. I'm podcasting from Koinonia Farm in Americus, Georgia. Historic Koinonia Farm, I should say. It's been about... last podcast was 2 weeks ago. I skipped a week. Sorry. I have recorded a dumpster diving trip that I made with Brendan, and upon listening to it, it was boring. And sorry. I might do it. I may record again. Like, Brendan definitely needs to be on the show. But yeah, it was long and boring. It was a great dumpster diving night, though. And one of the things that kind of came to me about dumpster diving and sort of the value as far as a sustainable practice, I don't know how to use the word sustainability in that context, but I think that the whole culture that sort of embraces, dumpster diving, in many ways, I think that it's about reuse. I mean, it obviously is, but then like I sort of got a really good understanding of it when, on this last trip, we got a big old box that had was filled with blueberries, like, and they were all individually packed in these things, and it was just in the trash. And I mean, there were some nasty ones in there, but for the most of them, were good. So, along with like a ton of dairy products, which can be scary, but they were really cold, and they were still cold. and they weren't past the expiration date. So anyway, but the blueberries, especially just watching that, I mean, I was kind of sorting out stuff, and Kurt, my roommate, and Brendan, to whom I am protege, dumpster diving protege, he jokingly said, they sorted out all these blueberries. So here's what happens. Like, this stuff that was in the dumpster and was just going to go to a landfill somewhere, and surely, like, a lot of it would have just, what do they call it, biodegraded or degraded or whatever, except for probably the plastic. But I'm not sure how that really works. But here's what happened to that stuff. Instead, we took it out of the dumpster, brought it back here. Kurt and Brendan sorted out the blueberries and, you know, cleaned the ones that were good, threw the other ones into compost so it goes back to the earth and helps with our organic garden here. And the box and the boxes got recycled. So, I don't know, like, it seems like a small thing, but in other ways, it just really kind of underscores for me our sort of the way our society is with just, oh, we'll throw it away. And the way I am, because I'm still like, there's a recycling thing just maybe, I don't know, not very far from where I live. And I haven't really been recycling because I'm a lazy ass. I mean, I could walk over there. There's a whole recycling center, just like it's right next to the dining hall. And I could go over there with cans or whatever, and I just choose not to, mostly. And it would be so easy for me, and I'm still not doing it. But, you know, whatever. I went and got food out of a dumpster, so there you go. So, let's see. There were a couple of things I wanted to say before we got onto the interview today. Today I have Israel, who is my neighbor. He lives on the other side of the duplex from me. He's also my spiritual companion. Everyone here has a spiritual companion. And what else is there to tell you about him? Well, you'll hear more when we do the interview. I do want to thank some people. First off, in the last episode I did, I said I wanted money for a camera. And a couple people sent me money. One was Sharon of Lynn Cards, also known as Sharon in Tampon. She lives in Tampa. Get it? And she sent me some cash. Thank you, as did Derek Etnier. And I know I'm saying your name wrong. Am I? He sent some money, too. So that was very cool of you guys. The other good news about that is that soon after that episode, I got an email from, oh, my God, John Whiteside in Houston of the blog By the Bayou. And he also blogs for the Houston Chronicle. He told me he had an old camera that was just sitting in a drawer, and he mailed it to me. So I have a camera now. But wait, if you're planning on not sending me money, or if you were originally planning on sending money, you still can. Because hopefully, I'd like to raise the money. Like, all the money that just got sent to me, I'm leaving in my PayPal account. It would be nice if at some point I could buy a new portable recorder that had a nice built-in mic. We'll see. We'll see what happens with that. But I still have my iRiver. I just hate using the built-in mic because it sounds bad. But it's funny that I'm having that sort of desire coupled with the knowledge that, like, whatever I do is just, you know, fine. But really, being out here has shifted my kind of my perceptions of the thing, of what I need and what is really important for me to have and what is just nonsense. Well, not nonsense, like things that I'm down to really $15 a week now, because that's what my stipend is here. And I had some money saved, and now it's gone. So, and I can live on $15 a week. We eat once a day in the dining hall. There's a huge lunch, and I make food. I work in the kitchen on Thursdays. I made sweet potato quesadillas, incidentally, that were delightful. It's really my favorite day, work-wise. But I was talking to Matt. We've been chatting every day, Matt Blender, while I'm at work doing product entry stuff. Why am I out of breath? But he would kind of express concern that I wasn't eating enough or eating right. And really, I am. Sure, some of it comes out of a dumpster, but it's not that bad. Like, I had never dug through a dumpster for food before now. And it's not that that's my only option. But it's fun. And I'm enjoying doing that. But the food in a dumpster behind a grocery store really isn't that bad. and some of it's good. Like, we got, what were some of the, we got a bunch of sodas that, and they were in there just because the box was dented. And, you know, sure, there were like raw eggs on the cans when we got them out, but we washed them real good. So that's all right. So, where was I going with that? I don't know. I try to explain what it's like to have the sort of shift I'm having about. One of the things was this week going to grocery shop with $15 only. Like before, I've been able to kind of go above, or go way above and buy stuff that I'm used to having, like expensive coffee or something like that. And I looked at, I was going to buy this Starbucks coffee. And I was like, oh, it's only $6. It's usually, and then it was like, wait a minute, I have $15. And it was like $6 and change. So I don't just really having a new way of evaluating what I'm used to having. And then like kind of the, I don't know how to explain it. The feeling of suddenly realizing that I'm, for me, doing without means not getting to have Starbucks coffee. Or, you know, like any kind of like really nice coffee, and like buying Folgers or something. And like, that's not that bad. There are people who have it a lot worse than that. So it's just, it's like kind of, I'm getting kind of both sides of that. One side feeling like, who do I think I am to want this kind of expensive coffee? And the other side of, God, it still isn't that bad. Like just that realization that, you know, it could be a lot worse and I'm choosing to be in this situation. So it's really not bad at all. Although like it's frustrating at times. So anyway, I'm going back and forth about maybe I could really stay here because theoretically the next level of commitment to this place is to, commit to stay for a year. And then I would get like, I think it's $70 a week instead of 15. And I would be here for a year. And I have some ideas about how that might work. But I'm not sharing them right now because I'm not, I have a tendency to get excited about something and be like, blah, 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 I'm going to do this. And then without taking the time to think about it or realize, figure out whether it's really even possible. So instead of doing that, I'm going to wait and let you guys know about it later. So let's see. Oh, I want to do another... episode where people contribute things. And the next episode, as you may remember, is going to be, well, it may not be the very next episode, but when I do that kind of episode, it's going to be mom related. So if you have something to send, like Brad Clymer already sent a song and it's badass. So the bar is high on this one. But if you have like poem, recording a story, any kind of short thing up to like 5 minutes or so, unless you just really can't, it'd be great to have that input. And it doesn't have to be like happy, sweet stuff. Whatever that kind of brings up for you, let me hear it. Send it in. You can email it, mikeypod.com. You can call 206-339-6682. And I think you can leave up to 5 minute message there. And it gets sent to me as a WAV file. I think it's WAV or MP3, something like that, into a sound file that I can use. I can just download. And I can include that too. Though I would rather, if you can, record it at you know, a pretty good quality. But if you can't and you really, not even if you really, and you want to contribute, and the only way you can do it is to leave a voicemail, please do. So that is that. After this, we will have the interview with Israel.
Well, early voting is in progress, and November 7th is the general midterm election. Take some time to research the issues, discuss the candidates with your friends and associates, call the campaigns, listen to radio, TV, podcasts, newspapers, anything you can get your hands on. Yes, put a little bit of effort into making sure that you make the most informed choice possible. It is the one true freedom that you have, exercising your right to choose your elected representatives. Please take the time on November 7th to let your voice be heard, and thank you for being a good American and taking time out of your busy days to make a difference. This public service announcement is brought to you by FreshMediaWorks.com.
I'm here with Israel, who is my spiritual companion at Koinonia, and we're going to talk about what he lived in a well, first you should say hi. I always forget to do that.
Hi.
All right, thank you. That's enough. he lived in a community in Wisconsin. For how long did you live in that place?
I lived there for 5.5 years.
And it was like a community that was like a fundamental Christian community for people with disabilities, right?
Yes.
So, well, what was that like?
Well, it was good because it was my first time being away from my family and where I grew up. So I was completely removed from what I knew. So it gave me a chance to grow up in a lot of ways, but it was not so good because I never really fit in very well with that crowd, and as time went on, it got worse and worse.
Yeah, and those reasons will be revealed soon.
Yes.
Well, yeah. One of the things that changed while you were there was that your belief system kind of took a big turn. But before we talk about that, where was your belief system before, like spiritually and religiously and all of that?
Well, I was raised in an evangelical Christian household, so. Up until a few years ago, I classified myself in the Christian category. So.
Yeah. So, but even then, were you as? I can never think of positive ways to refer to to fundamentalism. Were you as freaky as they were when you got there? I mean, you were you? I don't know what the word I'm looking for. To me, that fundamentalists seem so close-minded and rigid and that sort of thing, but you don't strike me that way at all, and I have a hard time picturing you like that. But were you more sort of narrow-minded before?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I did try to line up myself with much if not all of the standard theological doctrinal statements that are out there for Christianity, but that was partly because I really didn't want to look at anything else, and I wanted to fit in too. So
yeah, so but in some, I mean, in a lot of ways, you were not. There were parts of you that didn't fit into that, and you were just sort of keeping those to yourself. And
I wasn't on the same page, but nobody knew that.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, one of the things that I'm alluding to and not saying is that you are bisexual.
Yeah.
And that's something that you've been struggling with since you were, 10 years old? Was that what you're saying? Or is that
that would be the religious persuasion.
Okay.
But the whole bisexual thing, probably around 13, 14 years of age, it started.
Yeah.
So,
and then I know that your parents were, they knew about this on some level, right? And well, I'm starting to draw conclusions from things you've said that I don't know the whole story of. So maybe you can fill me in.
You mean they knew about the whole bisexual idea? The whole thing? Well, they didn't know about it until my late teens. When I finally I sat them down one Sunday morning just before we were going to church, I told them I had something I wanted to tell them, and I was all tied up in knots. And I told them that I was attracted to guys, and I can remember that. I can't remember I'm all of the conversation very well, but I can remember the reaction I got like it was yesterday, because my dad especially had this stricken look on his face. And I felt so bad for him because I knew it was a shock for both of them. And so that started, at least with my parents, it was out in the open, and I was struggling against it from then on and up until quite recently.
So. Yeah. So you did some of these like ex-gay conference kind of things and all that stuff too, right?
Yes, I did.
So how was that?
It was helpful, and I'm glad I went through it. I just decided I didn't want to do that anymore.
Yeah. So then while you were in this community in Wisconsin, you began to embrace Judaism, right?
Yes. And in order to make sense of all this, not only had I been keeping my sexual orientation a secret, I was keeping a pretty tight rein on my religious persuasion as well, because my whole attraction to Judaism, it goes back to about 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And I had always been attracted to Judaism for a very long time, for almost as long as I can remember. I had a desire to follow the Jewish feasts and to observe other aspects of the Mosaic Law, but I thought it was a bad thing to do because as a Christian I wasn't supposed to have a desire to do any of that, and I wanted to go talk to my dad about it, but I never did, and it never came out in the open until my 21st birthday. When my dad and I were talking about what I wanted as a graduation gift, because I was going to graduate from high school that very same year, and he wanted to give me something special to mark the occasion, and he was getting very, very frustrated with me that I wasn't committing myself to any specific thing, and I wasn't giving him much to go on. Months, probably at least 6 months before my 21st birthday, I had been reading this Christian book about the importance of parents giving a blessing to their children at some point, mm-hmm. as a rite of passage into adulthood. And when I was reading it, at some point I realized that was what I wanted, and when I prayed about it to God, the term that kept popping into my head was a bar mitzvah, and so that's what I would ask for day after day after day, without telling everybody. I was praying for this bar mitzvah to happen, which I knew that it was not likely that it was going to happen because my dad shows almost no interest in Judaism at all, so I was basically praying for something that I really didn't think was going to happen. But 2 weeks before my birthday, Dad and Mom and I were driving home from church, and we were talking about the sermon, and he confessed that he was distracted, so he really didn't get much of the sermon. And I asked him what he was distracted about, and he said, well, it had something to do with your birthday. And immediately I thought about what I'd been praying for, and I was just holding my breath, hoping that he would say more, but he didn't at that time. And then it wasn't until closer to my birthday that he finally told me what he was going to do for my brother and I, and it was the same idea. He just wasn't able to incorporate much of the Jewish tradition into the ceremony, but it was the same concept. And so that was when my whole fascination with Judaism just burst out in the open, and they got the second shock of their life, I guess you could say.
So while you were at the place in Wisconsin, did you go into that place knowing that you were feeling like converting to Judaism, and did they know too? I mean, is this something you would share with them?
My parents or the people?
The people in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin.
I didn't know going into Wisconsin and that particular community that I would be moving into Judaism. And most of the people there, up until when I actually finally did, they didn't know very much about it either. From time to time, I'd make a passing comment about something Judaic, but most of the time nobody would comment on it. And I just leave it hanging. I wouldn't go any further, but the last 3 years of my staying there were very interesting, because that was when I started a switch.
Yeah. So, and then the reaction, of course, was welcoming and
oh, of course not. No, never. And I mean, some people were very welcoming, but for the most part, primarily in the very beginning, most of the people were very uncomfortable with it, or they were upset, and some of them were downright hostile.
So. Well, like, are there any examples of hostility that you feel comfortable sharing?
I guess it really wasn't anything really nasty. It was just that they would constantly try to engage me in conversation, and then at some point the conversation would switch to, you know, trying to convince me that I was wrong and that I was headed in the wrong direction and that I was reading the Bible wrong and that I don't need the Torah anymore, which is the first five books of the Bible. And it was just that I just got tired of always feeling like I'd have to defend myself on any given day, and there were a few times when we were in the dining hall, and they were serving food, that I wasn't aware that I was eating something unclean or that I would consider unkosher until after I had eaten it, and everybody was sitting around at the table watching me eat this, knowing full well what it was, and they wanted to see what my reaction would be when it finally dawned on me what I was doing. So it was that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean that's hostile, I guess. I mean, it's not direct violence,
no.
But it is like very cruel spirited, mean spirited.
Yeah, and it wore it on me emotionally.
Yeah. So would you say that is the main reason why you chose to leave that community, those types of incidents?
I would say that yes, primarily that was the reason why, because of my belief system. In the end, mm-hmm. I definitely no longer fit there. And whereas by the time I left, most of the people had come around to at least accepting where I was coming from, and they were willing to still have relationships with me and all. It just wasn't going to work, because I no longer fit there. It wasn't good.
So then you chose another Christian community, Koinonia. How did you first hear about this place?
I heard about Koinonia through my dad, actually. Where he works, there is a guy that was talking to him about Koinonia, because the two of them had been discussing the fact that I was actively looking for another place to live, and he knew I wanted to be closer to my parents. If I couldn't be directly in Georgia, I needed to be one or two states over, closer than Wisconsin, definitely. And so he suggested that we check out this place, and my dad was actually the one that checked it out before I did, and then he told me about it over the phone, and it happened to be a day where I was having a very, very bad day, and I was close to tears on the phone, telling him, this is not working. I need to get out of here. he was trying to calm me down. He said, why don't you check this place out? And I did. And immediately my curiosity was up, because I'm on the website. It said that they were open to people of all different backgrounds, all different faiths, and to differing sexual orientations as well.
Yeah.
So, I was originally going to go for a 2-week period, but then when the community found out that I was looking at this place as a permanent place to live, they said that you need to be here for at least a month, and they were starting up a summer internship, and it was going to be their first internship ever, and it would mean committing to this place for 3 months, and I was a little leery about committing to it for that length of time, but I decided to go ahead and do it, because I figured this opportunity wasn't going to come around many times soon again, so I jumped at it, and here I am.
That's, I wanted to say, what kind of freak would commit to staying here for 3 months? So clearly it worked out, and you decided to come here.
Yes.
So you did your 3-month internship and then started a year long. What I'm doing is community intern,
right?
And then you're a service intern, right? Year-long commitment is.
Yeah, but I started out as a community intern, such as yourself. So yeah,
such as yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
So, so you've been here almost a year and 3 months. Am I calculating correctly?
Well, there was like a period of about 7 weeks or so that I left immediately after the summer internship was up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back in November,
and okay.
I've been here ever since.
And so you just had your review. I mean, what did they call that? The
I don't know what the official term is, but I refer to it as my end of the year meeting. It's just a chance to check in, see how you're doing, what are your plans for the coming year, what would you like to do, would you like to stay, how's your work going, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's good. I'm glad that you're here, because one of the things, because that first weekend that I was here, I was kind of freaking out. I was like, oh, God, what have I done? I mean, it wasn't because anything besides the fact that, okay, I'm really here at this place. I totally have left my job and my life in Houston. Yeah. And I wasn't sure yet how they were going to take the fact that I was gay. I knew Bren knew. And I've found out since then that other people knew, or like people figured it out pretty quick. I can't understand why. But we were doing the freedom walk, and when I learned that you were Jewish and like people drove you to temple and all that stuff, I was like, oh, this place is a little more open-minded than I thought. And that day I was sort of trying to like lay the groundwork for letting everyone know that I was gay. Like, I think I should ask Anne. I don't know if she already knew. I mean, no one really was shocked, but it was one of those moments I was like, okay, there's a Jewish guy here, so at least it's okay that I'm not Christian. But yeah, so that day was fun. And plus, we just got along really well, like pretty much right off the bat, I thought.
I think so.
Yeah. So,
I was acting, of course, but.
Yeah. But then but you hadn't come out at all yet here, and I came out in that spiritual mentor, or the spiritual meeting that we had when everyone was meeting their whatever. And you told me what your reaction was to that before.
Yes.
But you haven't said it on the podcast, so.
Well, my reaction was when I was listening to you talk, and then you said right on the open that you were gay, I was so shocked, and it was hard for me to keep a straight face.
Oh, yeah.
Because I told you later that, you know, I went home and I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. So, I mean, I thought it was pretty cool, but, and which made it easier for me to tell you, pretty early on, that I was bisexual.
You alluded to it one week, and I was sort of like, oh, whatever. I totally didn't get it. But I thought, was he just telling me that he's bisexual or he's attracted to men? Something you said. And then, but I'm so like, totally was gone. So, but your experience here, like, so I guess it was 2 weeks ago that you came out in that email, right?
I had told a couple of people before then that I was bisexual, but actually coming out was 2 weeks ago when I sent out a mass email to about 40 people. And it's been very interesting.
So you've got, like, the responses you've gotten from people here have been like, oh, I keep wanting to reinforce this for people who are listening to this and still like asking me, like, I don't know how much contact you have with the outside world, and people are convinced that I'm like in this, not many people, but some people are still like very resistant to the fact that there can be Christians who are open-minded and not filled with hate. So to help to emphasize that, like, your response from people here was that, like, Joe, who was like, I had her on the podcast quick. She read something. But she came and gave you a hug, right, and congratulated you, right?
She said congratulations, and she gave me the biggest hug, and she said, "You have crossed a hurdle, and you've climbed a mountain, and I'm so proud of you, and and all that stuff." I was like, "Wow!"
I know, getting those responses to something like that. Like, after I came out, the only person that I thought might have a problem with it was, maybe I shouldn't name her by name, but
probably not.
Yeah, so I won't. But I thought, like, just because I think it was after. Well, maybe I shouldn't put any of these details in, but there was something that made me think, oh, that's someone who's very Christian in the way that maybe wouldn't accept homosexuality. And she was at that meeting. But even she, after this meeting, when I said, you know, I came out, it was one of those moments, is like, blah, here it is. But she gave me a big hug after the meeting, and she's been super nice to me ever since. So, yeah. And so I don't even get the sense from her that it's one of those love the sin, hate, love the sinner, hate the sin thing or whatever.
Yeah.
But I really feel like she's just generally like, okay.
Yeah.
So that's what my experience has been here, that I really, it's taught me a lot. I mean, I don't know. Have you had that experience too, that, I mean, I've been really resistant to Christianity for probably my entire life.
Okay.
Well, at least since like high school. Once I started realizing like, okay, I'm not quite like these people and they think I'm going to burn in the lake of fire. So maybe I'll just stay away from them. But I don't know. Has that been in your experience since being here too? Do you feel like a sort of a more of a lightness maybe toward...
toward
being open about being who you are.
Yeah, it's been a relief to me that knowing more and more that I don't have to hide these things about myself, mm-hmm. and I don't have to try and package myself in a way where I'm, quote, the most acceptable to the most amount of people.
Yeah.
And I can just let myself be who I am, whatever that is. And I mean, it's been totally cool.
Right on. Yeah. Well, we've been going for right about 30 minutes, which was our goal time.
Wow.
And it's perfect. It seems like we've winded down to an appropriate ending space.
Okay.
So, yeah, is there anything you want to throw in before?
No.
Nope. Okay. Well, thanks for being on the podcast. And say goodbye to the people.
Bye.
And that concludes the interview with Israel. Yeah. So, in conclusion, if you have mom things to send, send audio files to MikeyPod@gmail.com. Or you can call 206-339-6682. If you want to contribute to the recording fund, you can click on the PayPal link at MikeyPod.com. And just say hello. Send an email or whatever if you just want to say hi. Because I love hearing from people. Let me know that you're out there. Okay. I'm going to leave you with this song by Alexis Cole. She was a Koinonia visitor who lives in New York right now. And she gave me permission to play her music, so I'm going to play this song. It's called Morning With You, and I'll see you next week, if not sooner. Bye-bye.
Wake, slowly coming to, after sleeping a wink or two. The sun on the rise is streaming into your eyes, and I see how you look at me as you smile so adoringly. You yawn in the day and gently kiss sleep away, spooning snuggles and pillow talk as we look sadly at the clock. The minutes tick away and then we must get up. So we rise, stretch and face the day. And I love how you always say, I dream every night of spending mornings with you. the sun on the rise is streaming into your eyes, and I see how you look at me with your smile so adoringly. You yawn in the day and gently kiss sleep away, spooning snuggles and pillow talk as we look sadly at the clock. The minutes tick away and then we must get up. So we rise, stretch and face the day. And I love how you always say, I dream every night of spending mornings with you. I dream every night of spending mornings.